Are vegans actually unhealthy?
Does cannabis ruin your sleep?
And why are so many men taking testosterone supplements? I'm Mitch.
And I'm Greg.
And we're the creators of the popular YouTube channel ASAP Science.
Every week on our podcast Side Note by ASAP Science, we explain the science behind a controversial subject with recent research, up-to-date studies, and ridiculous stories so you are entertained while, bam, simultaneously learning.
We're here to make science make sense.
Download Side Note by ASAP Science wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to a Frequency Podcast Network production.
It is unequivocal that human activities are responsible for climate change. That's the finding of a new study by the UN's Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change.
UN Secretary General called the findings a code red for humanity, adding that it must be a death knell for coal and fossil fuels.
There's nothing new in the IPCC's latest report. No new bombshells we didn't know. We expected all of this. This report confirms what research and experience has already told us is happening. But it's still a massive deal. For the first time ever, we have several thousand pages of definitive research compiled by hundreds of scientists and agreed to by 195 countries that tells us exactly what the Earth's climate looks like right now and what the future might hold. This report finally gives us one definitive place to go to for an up-to-date, comprehensive understanding of the climate crisis. And the report has one big conclusion that no one can ever question again. Human activity, specifically the burning of fossil fuels, is causing extreme climate events, from record-breaking heat waves to devastating wildfires and floods. The science is definitive. Each decade since the 1980s has been warmer than the last. Global temperature has increased by over 1 degree Celsius since 1850. The planet is the hottest it's ever been in 125,000 years. All of this is messing with our water cycles and may lead to more compound extreme events. That's two or more hazardous climate events happening at the same time or right after each other. A heat wave during a drought. A wildfire following a storm. A freezing cold snap following a flood. No place or human on Earth is free of these impacts. As terrifying as that sounds, there's hope. It's not too late. While the Earth's warming is locked in, there's still time to slow down the rate of impact. The IPCC gives us a roadmap, a plan forward, a way to prepare and protect ourselves. The first thing we have to do is get to net zero by 2050. Canada made that goal the law of the land just a few months ago. Is it enough? What do we all need to do now after the hottest summer of our lives and the IPCC's unequivocal conclusion that we humans caused all of it? After all, this report isn't about climate anymore. It's about us, our health, our well-being, and our safety. So what do we do now? Fatma Sayed sitting in for Jordan Heath Rawlings. This is The Big Story. Rick Smith is the president of the Canadian Institute for Climate Choices. Hi, Rick. Thanks for being here.
It's a pleasure.
So what was your first reaction when you read the report?
Well, I mean, let's just acknowledge that this thing is massive. I mean, it's thousands of pages. Hundreds of scientists around the world have been working on this thing for the last many months. 14,000 studies were incorporated and summarized and synthesized in this report. So it's an enormous amount of information. This is the most significant update to what we know about climate in many years, over half a decade. You know, there's a lot of stuff in there that's not surprising. I mean, for anybody that's been keeping track of climate change science, I mean, the notion that warming is getting is happening more quickly than expected would not be news. I think one of the more significant aspects of the report is the unequivocal linkage based on the best available science that recent extreme weather events are being driven by climate change. I mean, the IPCC has never been that explicit before. And of course, There's this whole new discipline called attribution science that's quite new. This new kind of science makes it possible for us to say, yeah, this particular heat wave is being driven by climate change. That's a very new development in the climate change debate, and I think very powerful because, you know, long story short, what this report does is it brings climate change home for people. Climate change is a health concern. Climate change is an issue of cultural survival for many peoples around the world.
So it's interesting you use the word unequivocal, because that's the word that is stood out to me as well in the report. It comes up time and time again. You know, the certainty of human activity causing the warming and the extreme weather events that we're seeing was undeniable in this report. I wondered why this report is getting more attention than previous iterations. Is it because it comes like on the back of some extreme weather events that we're still experiencing? Or is it just how, as you mentioned, how comprehensive it is?
I think a big part of it is that climate change science has gotten a lot better over the last decade and since the last big IPCC report. It wasn't that long ago that climate scientists, when they talked about climate change, had to sort of go up to the 30,000 foot level, and they talked about the extent of global warming, and they weren't really able to drill down and make predictions for specific locations around the world about what warming would look like in your neighborhood. Mm-hmm. The report had any number of analyses showing specific climate change impacts in specific places around the world. You know, you're quite right. You know, we're coming off a summer where climate change literally came to the doorstep of British Columbians in terms of incredible heat waves, of people across Europe who are dealing with intense flooding, people in Greece who've had to be evacuated because of intense fires. I mean, it just goes on and on. So this report, in terms of its granular conclusions, in terms of its tangible conclusions, aligns with the lived experience of people around the world and people around the world this summer.
Let's take a step forward and talk about the reactions to the report, because at the end of the day, a report is just a report until someone does something with it, right? So, you know, we had Environment Minister Jonathan Wilkinson put out a statement in which he just, you know, commended the authors of the report, reiterated that, you know, climate change is unquestionable, that it's impacting Canada, that it's going to play a part in the negotiations at COP26 in Glasgow in a couple of months, and that Canada is taking aggressive climate action to avoid the worst impacts of climate change. Very soon after, though, there was a news report about how Wilkinson was defending the government's purchase of the Trans Mountain Pipeline, saying that the government needed the money. That's quite contradictory, right? Like, what's your take on how the government responded to the report yesterday?
Well, you know, I think that it was kind of lost in the stampede to summer, but it is true. In the last few months, our country has taken some real significant steps forward in terms of getting its act together on climate. So last month, finally, Parliament approved the Net Zero Accountability Act. So moving towards net zero carbon emissions is now the law of the land in this country. We now have an improved target with respect to electrification of vehicles, you know, and the list goes on. So I kind of feel like, you know, as Canadians, we've spent a lot of the last few years arguing about whether we should embark on the carbon transition trip at all. We finally have all-party consensus that the action is necessary. We now have different parties approaching that question from their different perspectives. But I actually welcome the fact that finally, like most countries around Europe, like many countries around the world, we have an all-party consensus now that we need to get a move on with respect to significant carbon reductions as quickly as possible. So there's a lot of work to do to figure out how to do that. Our organization, the Canadian Institute for Climate Choices, has done a number of big studies recently. We've concluded that getting to net zero in Canada is possible, but that it's going to involve a suite of measures, getting serious about building efficiency, getting serious about electrifying everything, and then making sure that sources of electricity are non-emitting. We have the architecture now to move forward, but we need to nail down the details, not just at the federal level, but provincially and municipally.
In 2007, TV network CBS dropped 40 kids in the middle of the New Mexico desert as part of a brand new reality show. These kids would have to build their own society from scratch. And if this sounds like Lord of the Flies to you, well, it was meant to.
We were on this mission together. We were going to prove to the world that we could make a better society than adults could.
I'm Josh Gwynn, and I want to know what this wild TV experiment was really about. Split Screen, Kid Nation, a six-part podcast from CBC. Available now.
So what do we need to do? Based on the report, what the report tells us and, you know, the path it charts forward, what do we as Canadians now need to do to meet the least worst case scenario outlined in the report?
Yeah, it's very important to underline that the biggest variable in that report is what humans do in terms of bringing down or not carbon levels. And what the report showed is if we start to bring down carbon levels to net zero in the next few decades, warming of this planet will start to get better. So there were actually new calculations, new models in the report that actually showed that to the extent that we thought previously that perhaps a lot of warming had irreversible momentum or was already baked in, there was an aspect of the report that was actually quite positive, showing that if we hit these targets, if we get our act in gear, we can slow and start to reverse warming of the planet within our lifetime. Our organization, the Canadian Institute for Climate Choices, did a report on net zero a couple of months ago. And what we've shown is that in order to hit our necessary targets by 2030, the vast majority of what needs to be done by 2030 can be achieved through what we call safe bet technology. Things that we already know how to do, we just need to get a move on. So getting serious about building efficiency. Here in Toronto, huge condos go up every day, and the efficiency of the buildings we're putting up right at this moment are not where they need to be, and not what other countries are doing. Getting serious about building efficiency, getting serious about accelerating electrification of vehicles, not just light-duty vehicles, but heavy-duty vehicles. Getting serious about shifting our energy production to non-carbon emitting sources top to bottom. We can do these things in the next decade.
Can I put you on the spot and ask you like one action item that every level of society needs to do? So for example, what's one thing the government needs to do?
I would say put a much greater emphasis on electrification. A supply of electricity is something that governments at all levels are engaged with. There's a role for each level of government in that question. Mm. At the moment, in terms of how we run our cars, in terms of how we heat our homes, a lot of energy sources emit carbon, and we need to change that. So our country getting its act together and creating a better coordination between levels of government on something as fundamental as electricity is something that needs to happen in the next few years.
What's one thing industry needs to do, whether it's manufacturing or oil and gas?
Every company in this country, publicly traded, privately held, needs to align its operations with what is now the law of the land of this country, which is net zero. And we're starting to see, I mean, I'm actually quite optimistic about the extent to which capital markets are now engaged in this question. I mean, you see a huge push in advance of the UN meeting in Glasgow for mandatory disclosure of carbon emissions and carbon risk when it comes to bigger companies. And that's a huge step forward. And other countries are ahead of us in this regard, but I think we'll get there. Of course, it would make no sense if the law of the land of this country is we're going to get to net zero, and yet the private sector is continuing to operate, continuing to deploy its capital, continuing to create investment in a way that's contrary to that goal. So I think what we're going to find quite quickly is that consumers, governments, companies that are actually getting their act in gear are going to kick other companies into action to align their operations top to bottom with a net zero pathway.
And then what's one thing people like you and I can do?
You know, you and I are having this discussion the day after the IPCC report. And I'd be lying if I didn't tell you that I was reflecting on that thing last night. And I woke up this morning still thinking about it. And there is so much negativity associated with the climate change debate. It is so easy to slip into a kind of a nihilism and a wow, we're all screwed, what's the point type mentality. You know, maybe this is a bit more general an answer than you wanted, but for me, it's really important today, every day moving forward, that as individuals, we keep in mind our own agency, that the future's not written. Yes, a certain amount of climate change is now inevitable, but we still can avoid the worst of the damage. And in a weird way, acknowledging that some damage to the planet is already done is kind of liberating, because then we can start to think about, you know, every ton of carbon that we can together avoid releasing into the atmosphere means less damage for our lives and our kids' lives in future years. So whether it's through our actions as consumers, whether it's through our engagement as voters, whether it's just in terms of our activities as Canadians, what I'd like people to do is to shake off this attitude that we can't affect what's happening or things are too far gone, which was the tone of a lot of the coverage of the report yesterday, and it's frankly just not right. The future's not written.
Well, it's interesting because even the report seem to attempt to normalize the idea that climate change has changed the world, that, you know, there will be some changes, sea levels will rise, the world will be a little hotter, but that doesn't mean it's apocalypse, that there's still things we can do to slow it down.
Yeah, and of course we know from other contexts that the fact that scientists can now measure the impacts of climate change today and say to people in British Columbia and Greece and Germany and India and everywhere else around the world that's suffering extreme heat at the moment, can say to people, the reason this is happening is because of climate change. That's actually a huge step forward. And that actually makes the resolution of this problem a lot more likely. Because we know what happens when people start concluding that thing over there is negatively impacting my health, my family's health. Things start to get resolved. And so that's what happened here in Ontario with coal plants. Coal plants in this province were not closed down because of climate change arguments. They were closed down because of smog arguments and through the pressure of families with family members with asthma, with heart conditions that are exacerbated by smog. And Ontario doctors and nurses and healthcare professionals saying, listen, we can dramatically improve the health of Ontarians if we close down these coal plants. So it was a health argument that closed down coal plants in Ontario. Similarly, there's lots of other examples of pollution issues that have become resolved once people started to perceive them as health issues rather than environmental issues. And I think that was one of the significant aspects of the IPCC report. It was a health report. It wasn't so much an environmental report, and that's a big change in this issue.
Sorry, can I ask you to unpack that a little bit?
I think people to quite often have kind of, they put issues in pigeonholes in their mind, even if it's kind of unspoken or even not conscious, right? To a large extent, climate change has lived in an environmental pigeonhole in people's minds, where people have looked at climate change as, or most people have looked at climate change as a kind of a far away concern, something that, is important to work on, but yeah, I'm concerned about it, but not so sure that it's going to impact the here and now. Maybe it'll impact my grandkids, right? Mm-hmm. I think the significance of this year, this summer, the IPCC report yesterday, is all of a sudden there's certainty around the fact that climate change is here. It's causing fires now. It's causing extreme heat now. It's causing flooding now. People believe that. People see it. They've made those connections. And so it's kind of busted climate change out of that environmental pigeonhole into a broader space that's directly connected on a gut level to people's desire for well-being and for health and for the safety of their families. And that's a much more potent place for an issue to live and a place that makes that issue much more likely to be resolved. And so that was the inflection point, that moment that coal plants in Ontario became a health concern for people as opposed to just an unsightly environmental problem. That was the moment that issue started on the road to resolution. So I think we're going to get there now more quickly with climate change.
So throughout this conversation, you've really tried to, you know, remind us that the report isn't all doom, right? That there is hope in it and there is a roadmap for positive action. For those who haven't read anything about the report, haven't read the report, maybe still doubt climate change, what's one message that you can give them?
That reducing carbon levels will result in a better life for all of us. If you're a farmer in the West right now dealing with historic drought, that is without a question being exacerbated by climate change. If you're fishing on the West Coast and salmon runs are depleted, we know now that there's a climate change impact to that because ocean currents are being affected and waters are warming. If you're a tourism operator in northwestern Ontario trying to make a living, maybe you run a lodge or maybe you run a fishing outfit or maybe you work at a restaurant in a town that's a tourism town and that entire economy is being impacted by out of control wildfires in northwestern Ontario. So the certainty of climate change impacts are widespread. They are impacting our health. They are negatively impacting our economy. In the north of our country, 40% of our country is permafrost. There's no question now that permafrost is melting because of climate change effects, and that's an issue of cultural survival for Indigenous peoples in the north of our country. So I guess my takeaway from this summer and from the report yesterday is that it doesn't matter where you live, doesn't matter what you do for a living, doesn't matter who you are, doesn't matter how old you are, your life is being negatively impacted by climate change at the moment. So you need to care, you need to get engaged, and we need to pull together to make the changes necessary.
Thanks so much for walking us through that, Rick.
Thanks a lot.
That was Rick Smith, the president of the Canadian Institute for Climate Choices. And that was The Big Story. You can find more at thebigstorypodcast.ca. If you want to send us a message, we're on Twitter, TheBigStoryFPN. You can also send us an email, thebigstorypodcast@rci.rogers.com. I'm Fatma Sayed. I've been your guest host for the past week, but Jordan Heath Rawlings will be back tomorrow. Thank you so much for letting me speak to you for the past week. I hope you've enjoyed the conversations and learned as much as I have. A very special shout out to producers Stephanie Phillips and Joseph Fish for making these episodes so fun to do and listen to. And of course, thank you to Jordan for going on vacation and letting me sit in his virtual chair. You can find me on The Backbench, a podcast about Canadian politics. Until then, this is Fatma Sayed signing off The Big Story. Thank you again for listening, and please take care of each other.
In 2007, TV network CBS dropped 40 kids in the middle of the New Mexico desert as part of a brand new reality show. These kids would have to build their own society from scratch. And if this sounds like Lord of the Flies to you, well, it was meant to.
We were on this mission together. We were going to prove to the world that we could make a better society than adults could.
I'm Josh Gwynn, and I want to know what this wild TV experiment was really about. Split Screen, Kid Nation, a 6-part podcast from CBC. Available now.